Welcome back, everybody. Brainstorm Brewery, and this is what you've all been waiting for. This is the episode where I get to tell my GP Vegas story.
It's been like months.
Months?
It's been literal months.
Wait.
GP Vegas.
I'm sorry, I said GP Vegas. I mean,
you said Vegas twice.
I said GP champion, GP Vegas. I mean, World Championship in Vegas last week.
Jesus.
My bad. All right, so here's
it was in Vegas. Give him a break.
No.
I lost a lot of money over the course of the week.
How?
Right? Playing craps, playing blackjack, playing pie gal, playing roulette, you name it.
I just want to let you guys know, you didn't see this. My beer got warm over the last hour we've been sitting here not podcasting, and it fucking fizzed up on me.
That's first world problems.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, well.
Yep. Well, my guess is it's probably an $8 beer, so.
It was a $6 beer, but whatever.
I'm actually drinking a beer that's not very good right now anyways, because it's been sitting for a long time.
So it's Bud Light, we know.
It's an unfiltered IPA, so you got to shake it up. And I guess I shook it too hard, and it got warm and fucking fizzled.
I'm drinking a what is
everyone who's watching. So here, if you're not watching us on YouTube, you miss stuff like that. So
yeah. Anyways, all right. So here's the thing: I lost a lot of money playing. However, the last night we were there,
did you say you lost money playing Pai Gow?
Yeah.
You're not supposed to lose at Pai Gow. I didn't think. I thought you either won or pushed.
Is that even mathematically possible?
Well, here's the thing. When you push, like, when you push a lot of the hands, right? I guess probably like 50% or something. The hands you win, they tax you 50 cents on. And the hands you lose your $10 on. So, like, you're never going to win. I mean, they still have their edge. But you are, I didn't lose much playing. I lost like 20 bucks, 30 bucks playing Pai Gal probably over the course of a night. That's not the point. The point is the last night we were there, I was with some people who wanted to play roulette. And in fact, one judge said, Corbin, 1v1 me in roulette. I didn't know that was a thing, so I asked, how do you 1v1 somebody in roulette? And he's like, well, you bet on the odds, I bet on the evens, and we'll see who does better after like 20 spins or whatever. Okay, so that's what we're doing. I'm throwing my money in. I'm a little intoxicated at this point. You know, it's like midnight, the last night of the trip or whatever.
Corbin Hostler, intoxicated at a work event?
Yeah, a little bit, just slightly. It was a long week of work. But so we're playing, and all I know is at some point I look up and my money is no longer on the odds where I put it. Because the way they do it is they deal out each person different colored, slightly different colored chips. And then everything has the same denomination. That way, since it's a roulette table, you're not, you know, that's how they keep track of it. So I see that my light blue chips have accidentally been mixed in with somebody's dark blue chips on the 0/00. Which is near the odd. And I started to protest. I'm like, hey, whoa, that's not right. But then they spun the ball or whatever. And I'm just like, whatever. And then it landed on 00. So I made $170.
So you accidentally won money? That's like every time you buy a collection.
I know, right? Like, literally, I was like going to say something to him about my money being in the wrong place. But then I just like shut my mouth. Pay me out. Those are my chips. Pay me my money. So I made.
Dude, they don't care if your money's in the wrong. They don't give a shit.
Yeah, but she put it there. So like, she actually messed up. Somebody I was with claims that I put it in the wrong spot, but other people were like, "No, you put them in the right spot." I think she just got them mixed up with the other person's chips because they were the same color nearly. But I got 17-1 on my $10 bet.
You've got way too much focus to be playing roulette. That roulette is the game where I don't want to think. I just want to move chips around and drink.
I was certainly drinking. Yeah, but it was sweet. I mean, I lost most of that by the end of the night, but it is the one night I still left positive. Lost money every other night.
That's cool. So
it was a cool story, man. That was the best part of Vegas. It was accidentally.
That's the worst story you told in the last hour.
It was bad.
That's true.
It's the worst one in the last hour. I'll give you that.
But if you want to hear the stuff we talked about in the last hour, some people have access to that. If you're a Patreon at patreon.com/brainstormbrewery, one of the tiers, I'm not going to say which one because I don't care.
Because he doesn't know.
I don't know. You have access to the after hours, which is, I don't know, it's some of the stuff that's not really fit for the regular publication.
If you want to hear about people being electrocuted, and if you want to hear what the difference between electrocuted versus shocked is...
That's true. We did talk about
that. Well, Shock deals 2 damage and Electrify does 4 damage. So.
There you go.
He's got you there, DJ. He's got
Electrification
you there.
Is twice as bad.
I hear there's some other benefits you could get from the Patreon. Is there anyone on this episode who could talk about that?
I'd like to say that I don't think so. Benefit.
Oh.
If you're a $40 patron, every 3 months, Jason has to listen to you and endure you for 2 hours. That's what I'm doing this year.
See? There you go.
I'm Stephen Kessler, and I'm super excited to be on with you guys tonight. How y'all doing?
You're still
He gives us so much money, I unmuted him on Twitter.
It's like the fourth time you've been on. You're still like... I'm super excited to be here, guys.
This is his second time, DJ. No. See?
Yeah.
No. You don't give us enough money for DJ to care about you as a person.
No, that's a, yeah.
This is not.
That's why I don't, when I buy stuff from him, I don't shout him out on Twitter either.
Oh, got him.
Oh, take that with your customer service.
You know that's all he cares about, anyways. It's not about good deals. It's just about that Twitter shout out.
That's all about tilting Jason.
More like. Does that tilt Jason? Lard Garden.
It does tilt Jason.
Oh, speaking of tilting, did you guys know that Pelt Collector is like a $12 card now?
I did know that, and it's because it's going to lead the way in Standard, right?
Or maybe it's because somebody just with a following talked about it and it got expensive. So the crazy thing is actually, though, like, and we did talk about this last week, legitimately, nobody has any idea what's going to be good in Standard. So the thing is, like, people are talking about Pelt Collector and it spiked, and Aurelia's been moving up as well. No one actually knows if any of these cards are going to be good in Standard.
March of the Multitudes hit 15. It was briefly above 25 today.
That's insane.
I called that at 5. JVL said no. And I said yes. And I said yes. I said buy your play set for $20 for March of the Multitudes.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's what I'm saying. We don't. You're saying, oh, I called it. But like,
it was
we don't know.
100%. I called that like you called your roulette table.
I mean, I guess that's right, yeah. That seems about
I mean,
right.
We all said, what, Pelt Collector, it's good. It's like Experiment 1. Get it for the one Standard deck it's in, but...
Yeah, it's just, and like I said last week, this is just such an unprecedented time where basically no decks survive rotations. Nobody knows what's good. No one knows what's going on. No one's had a chance to test any of it. There have been no...
And yet nothing's real, but people are saying, hey, Selesnya is overperforming. I feel like Selesnya overperformed a little bit at the pre-release, so I started targeting some of that stuff. I really thought the thing with the guys. I thought the thing with the guys was good. I like Amara a little bit more, but I was picking up some of that that Selesnya stuff. Divine Visitation.
Well, that's the same. Like March of the Multitudes got expensive. Pelt Collector got it. Those decks could just not show up in week one.
You can't tell me Pelt Collector is going to be twice as much money or three times as much money as Knight of Autumn in a couple weeks. There's just no way. People are just buying.
It's just hype weird... train. It's all hype train right now. So I don't even feel bad about. Like, I don't feel bad about. Oh, it's just a hype. We could have just thrown darts and tried to guess what the next hype train card is, because that's all any of this is right now. None
but
of these prices are real.
And I told people, hey, you should make a crazy bet. I bought a tally at like $1.50 and that hit 5 before it was the promo. Like, just sink some money. Just bet. Put all your money on double
if
zero.
If you want to have fun with it, for sure. Put all your money
Some people hit Pelt Collector. I put my money on Dream Eater. I whiffed. It's fine. Maybe that
Dream
Eater's
actually been
later.
Going up a little bit today.
Yeah, it's a good card. So maybe
it's
that goes
also
up
funny
later.
Because we're recording Monday night. Come Friday or whatever when people listen, it's probably going to be Pelt Collector. It'll be $2 again and something we haven't even talked about will be 15, but it's just so like
it's a crazy time right now.
We had a pro on for that, but I do think there's a science to set reviews in the sense of most of the times you can look at how things are going to slot into different places and make educated guesses. And even in a situation like this, we can look at cards and say, well, if it does this, this is what's going to happen, and that's more or less what we did. But it's all just a crapshoot right now. None of these prices are real. Maybe they will be real. Maybe they won't be. Nobody has any idea at all. And if anyone tells you they know, then they're lying to you. So, I mean, you can try to throw your dart at the dartboard correctly, or you can figure out what the YouTube content creators are going to be on this week, and that's as good a bet as any right now.
Or you look at the stuff like, hey, if March of the Multitudes really hits, why is Venerated Loxodon still $1.50?
Exactly.
Because it's going to go in the deck.
That's exactly right. In fact, it's probably better. And it'll probably be a 4 of instead of like a 2 of or whatever, March of the Multitudes. But yeah, so if you believe in March of the Multitudes or Pelt Collector or this type of deck, look at Venerated Loxodon.
Look at other sets, too.
Look at
there's
Ixalan,
stuff in Yeah, there's stuff in M19.
Jade
there's
Light
stuff
Ranger.
In... Yeah.
Yeah, Jade Light Ranger's a great one.
Vraska.
Green has a lot of cards. I mean, you
old Vraska. Excellent Vraska.
Yeah. Yeah, it, anyway, so we'll see, I guess. It's Aurelia going up is the interesting one. Aurelia is better than people thought at first. But we have literally no idea if a red-white deck is playable. So.
And that's why you play the pre-release. I played as many events as I could, so I could get a grasp on what cards are. And
yeah, I've been jamming a lot.
What overperformed. And
well, and the other thing, too, is that people just forget about Ixalan. It's not even like... It's not even like... And I keep bringing up it's different than other set rotations, but it's another way in which it's different. And that the last entire block that came out was just kind of so forgettable that no one even thinks about the cards in it. You know, they're not like, oh, my Ixalan deck is going to get an upgrade. They're building Guilds of Ravnica decks. And that's, while that certainly makes sense because it's new, that doesn't mean it's going to be correct. Maybe the best decks are going to be Ixalan decks or Dominaria decks with some Guilds cards put in them instead of building around Guilds of Ravnica. We don't know. So we'll see where it goes from here. But it is what it is. So so the plan for tonight, we got some stuff to talk about. There's some Battle Bond that came out, or is coming out, I suppose. So we've got a bunch of emails in the queue. We're going to get to all those. But first, you guys want
to bring some bold? Don't commit us to doing every single one,
We're going to get to some of the emails. All right, you guys want to do Breaking Bulk here?
Nah.
Always.
Nah.
Breaking Bulk time. Breaking Bulk time.
Oh, yeah, Breaking Bulk. There's so much good stuff.
It's a pick. Breaking Bulk. The end.
I got some new bulk in front of me. I'll look at it and pick one. Let's do it.
Ooh, is it Gaius Cradle?
No, not this time.
Humble Brag!
Not this time. It was two Gaius Cradles last time, just for the record. Alright, who wants to go first?
I have Dark Ascension White Uncommon.
Dark Ascension White Uncommon. Is
Lingering
it
Souls.
No, is it the thing that gives your tokens 1/1 in vigilance?
That is a common, no.
It's That's Lingering not... Souls, everybody.
They gather the townsfolk?
No.
Intangible gather the townsfolk is common.
Intangible Virtue was an uncommon, by the way.
Intangible Virtue was an Innistrad, I think.
Okay.
Okay.
That's what Jason was talking about, though. It is uncommon.
Oh, I thought you're talking about Rally the Peasants.
No, Rally the Peasants is good though.
It's none of those cards.
Is it Ray of
No
Dissolution?
Ray of Revelation.
That's also a common one.
White uncommon from Dark Ascension.
Mm-hmm.
That's Fateful Hour crap.
I mean, that is the set that is in. This card does not
yeah,
have Fateful Hour.
I know. I'm just
is it a creature?
No,
it
it's actually a card that's very good in EDH.
That's why I was thinking it was Intangible Virtue, because I could see that being EDH playable.
Nope.
Is it Bar the Door?
No.
I got nothing for you, buddy.
Two white, two colorless, enchantment or a curse. Enchant player.
Oh, Curse of Exhaustion.
Can't cast more than one spell each turn.
Yeah.
If you put this on somebody at EDH, they very, very quickly realize how frustrating the game has become.
Curse of Exhaustion.
If you don't have an immediate answer to if you don't have an immediate answer to this, it makes the game miserable for you.
Isn't there a two card combo where they can't play spells at all? It's like Well of Knowledge or something.
Yeah, you can knowledge pool them out with like
Teferi,
yeah. And you can do like shenanigans with that, and what's the Flipped Arayo?
Flipped Arayo is banned in EDH, isn't it?
Yeah.
So,
aren't there like other spells like it or other effects like it?
I mean, there's like worse versions of it. Not that I can think of offhand, but I do know that they've toyed with
I think Knowledge Pool was the main combo, though.
But Curse of Exhaustion just by itself is like just back.
Oh, yeah.
For a ton. Like,
it's an Arcane Lab, which is an annoying card, but it only affects not you, which is great.
The problem,
you can just put it on somebody,
the problem
like,
with playing curses and commanders is that, like, you better be prepared. As soon as you curse somebody, they're just coming after you.
But they're crippled when they do. Yeah. Like, put it on a Maelstrom Wanderer guy. See what he tries to get you with. Nothing.
I mean, sure, man.
A 7-mana 7/5.
Yeah, what you're saying isn't wrong necessarily, but sometimes they just kill the curse and then kill you because
put
you
put it on
them.
The mono black guy.
Like, yeah, but that's like saying they kill your creature, then kill you because you killed their creature. Like, yeah, cursing someone's pretty aggro, but is it any worse than, like, blowing up their mana rock or, like, doing anything?
Well, the thing is,
Everything that people do to me pisses me off, and I have a homicidal grudge against them that extends beyond
that's just
when the
EDH
game ends.
Works. Like, if you kill my soul ring, it's a vendetta. If you kill my ghostly person,
but I think most people kind of get, like, at least in the groups I play, like, people kind of get that sometimes you have to blow up people's stuff, right?
And
you
it's just not most people.
It's
you
part of the game.
Me, I'm coming after you for the rest of the night.
I will come like, after your family.
The thing is, like, blowing up someone's soul ring, like, that's part of the game. That makes sense. But Curse of Exhaustion is like, I chose you to screw, not kill, because that's less.
Then roll a die.
But I chose you
to like,
get to
you
get.
You can
screwed.
Also just if they happen to not have artifact enchantment removal, if they're not a green white deck, they're gonna have a tough time getting rid of it.
I guess they can Cyclonic Rift it. Like yes, there are decks that you can certainly take that into account. What decks can deal with it? I agree.
If like I have had this played against me as playing Gonti, and it made me miserable.
Yes, it does seem very good against a mono black deck.
It's the card in EDH. It's one of those cards that just sends a message. Like I want you to know that it's on between us.
Yeah, like I have it out for you specifically.
It's a very very useful tool in white. That can just make cripple people. It's just
I agree. No, it's certainly a powerful card.
And so, like, the buy list price on Card Kingdom is only a nickel right now. But this is one of those cards where I pick it and set it aside. And sometimes I don't buy list it for a nickel because I know other places sometimes make quarters.
Sure. Yeah.
It's also just good.
All right, Steven, what do you got?
All right, C17 uncommon
color.
That might give it away.
What?
It's you colorless.
Tell us the color.
All right, there's a lot of colorless.
Is it colorless as an artifact or like, as in a land? Does it have no color or is the color colorless?
Art of whatever.
No, you're wrong.
That thing.
Yeah. It is a land.
It's a land from C17?
From C17.
No, Forge of Heroes is common.
Ancestor's Path.
No, that was common. C18.
My bad.
Oh, C17, you're right.
C17, Path of Ancestry is common. C17, uncommon land.
Six printings.
Was it printed before then,
too?
Oh,
six printings. Then that's not a C17 card. Steven.
That's, what's it called? Crozen
Verge?
Not Crozen.
What's the original printing?
All right, that'll give it away. It's Return to Ravnica.
Rogue's Passage?
Yeah.
Yeah, we go by original printing.
You go by original, sorry, my bad.
Just because there's, like, it's very difficult otherwise.
All right, okay, my bad. Yeah,
Card that would have given it away, so I'm glad you dragged that out a little.
Card Kingdom will give you 24 cents buy list for that's the C17 version, and then the C15 version, they'll give you 30 cents buy list.
Well, that's one of the nice things to know about Card Kingdom or buy lists in general, is that I've noticed it specifically with Card Kingdom, that when you are selling to them, different printings of cards are worth quite a bit more. And something like Plane Chase or something, even if the price on the card is no different than the other printings of it, those sort of limited run prints, they just have fewer in stock. So their algorithm says to pay more.
Well, there's also another reason for that, the reason why they have less in stock.
What's that?
I mean, like, when you're talking about commander printings of cards, a lot of it comes down to search engine optimization when casuals are looking for cards to add to their decks through Amazon or Card Kingdom. So Card Kingdom fights a lot for, like, search engine optimization to be the first result that shows up when you're, like, a dirtle casual player who's like, Commander Soul Ring, click, and then they just go to the first link and then add it to their cart. So when they search for that, they're not getting revised Soul Rings. They're not getting, like, Time Spiral Crozen grips or whatever, they're getting the commander versions of that card. So that's a lot of the reason that those cards go out of stock more is just because of the search engine like metrics and algorithms.
I could buy that, yeah.
Interesting.
It's like true. Like
Alright, I've got a what set is this from? I've got a M15 uncommon for you guys. I don't know that we've done it. I hope I haven't done it before, but we'll see.
Uncommon
it's
what?
An M15 blue uncommon creature.
M15 blue uncommon creature. The Frost Titan Sliver?
No. Diffusion Sliver is what you're talking about, and no.
Yeah.
It is a DJ level pick, though.
So it's a nickel.
Illusory Angel.
Nope.
That's a rare.
Blue uncommon creature from M15.
Is it the, no, it's not. It's all artifact. It's not Phantasmal anything?
Nope.
No, the Phantasmals were M12.
Don't correct me.
Ooh, it sickens me. Yeah, you've never used that one before.
It's a fairy.
Oh, Quickling.
It is Quickling.
That card's great in Commander.
Card's, like, kind of serviceable in Modern sometimes, too. Picking up Spellstarter sprites. It's kind of sweet. But yeah, it's also a nice Commander card sometimes. But yeah, it's like, it's worth something. It's not worth a ton, but it's worth a little.
I stole it with Gonti recently, then played it and bounced Gonti.
See? There you go.
Woo!
All right, Jason, what do you got?
I think I've done Oketra's Monument before, haven't I?
Maybe. Or I did. Yes, one of us did.
In July.
There you go. I don't think Jason has one.
I have one for you, Jason. Do you want me to give you one?
Nah, I got a bulk rare from the same set.
Okay, but like an off bulk rare?
It's a very similar card. It goes in the same deck that I'm looking at for Oketra's Monument. It's almost the same card in rare, and I bet you guys don't pick this.
Okay. From what set? M15?
Same set as the Throne of the God Pharaoh. Oh shit, I just said the name of the card. Throne of the God Pharaoh is in the same set as Throne of the God Pharaoh.
I pick Throne of the God Pharaoh. It's like a dollar.
Yeah. I think more people are going to build Najeela for reasons we'll go into later in the podcast. And I was looking at Najeela cards that have sort of kind of settled, and I think
the broken ass commander.
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is the broken ass commander, and getting some help from new cards like Assassin's Trophy, Torch Courier, and Cleansing Nova. So I think more people will build Najeela the Blade Blossom coming up here pretty soon.
Stupid man,
that card didn't work in my Cranko deck.
Rashad Miller made a Najeela deck, and the first time we ever played is with it. None of us had ever seen the card before. And he just was like, I guess I'll play my commander. And then he just killed us like three turns later. And he doesn't even have a Najeela deck. He's not even playing a Najeela deck. He's playing a five-color Astral Slide deck where everything costs more than Astral Slide. And it cascades into Astral Slide. And then he just slides people out of the game. That's his entire deck. And he just put Najeela in as a new five-color commander and then found out, I can accidentally kill people with my commander.
Well, that's fun.
Corbin's so stupid.
Three turns after he played his commander, he killed you. That's a lot of turns to let a commander live.
Get some
removal. Yeah, maybe you should have done than nothing.
I was, like, playing my Yell or something, and I didn't have any... Like, I just didn't have a draw that lined up with it. I was just, like, playing my own threats, which, spoilers, aren't as good as Najeela.
So here's a pre-pick. You're going to see some Boros Lockets sitting around in draft chaff. Just people draft them, whatever, Boros Locket. You might even get some cheap foils of Boros Locket. Out of all the Lockets, which I think all of them overperformed over the weekend, by the way. I didn't expect to like Lockets more than Clue Stones. I absolutely do. I'm not a big fan of busting the ones like mid game, but if you're getting two cards, I don't mind doing that late. When your hand's empty, you got like nothing going on. Five mana, they're EOT. Do it up. Bust that Locket. So I actually think the Lockets are close to cards like Dreamstone Hedron. And if you look at Boros decks, they run shitty cards like that. They just like have to.
Gonna say that's the one Locket that I think actually I would play.
Because Dimir's got card draw, you know, like the other colors got card draw. They're not trifling with that crap, but I kind of think Boros needs to run maybe the Locket and the Clue Stone. They run like mono white and mono red were the decks that like first taught us, hey, maybe Mindstone should be a card. Like, I think the Lockets are going to get there. I think you get them in chaff, and I think this is like a 25-cent buy list card in 2 years. So why not just pick them for free, throw them in a box?
Are they commons or uncommons?
They're commons.
They're commons.
That's hard, man.
Yeah.
It's hard. I think whatever the foil is too cheap right now.
You get foils for 50 cents right now.
I'll buy it on foils.
Well, you're not going to find foils in draft chat for sure.
Right.
You might.
I'm looking right now. Channel Fireball is selling them for 50 cents a pop. They've got 12 in stock.
That's too expensive for me.
I'm not buying them at 50 cents.
I'm not buying any of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's only four vendors up, and it's topping out at $3 a pop.
All right.
It's out of all of them, it's the real card. So whatever.
Najeela is going to be a thing, Jason. Why is Najeela going to be a thing?
That's a great segue. Now, why wouldn't Najeela be a thing when all the cards from Battle Bond are expensive? Or, you know, basically past peak supply. All the stuff's pretty much settled where it is. Well, it turns out nobody knew this, but they resolicited for orders for a second wave of Battle Bond nobody knew was coming. So some dealers have been like, hey, I'm getting Battle Bond and I'm not getting limited on the amount I can order. I can order as much as I want, and as a small store, that seems crazy.
We're going to buy it. I actually didn't know about this until you told me, but we'll definitely be buying some Battle Bond.
Oh, yeah. Because, like, all the mythics are nuts. Like,
there's a bunch of money in the set.
Yeah.
It's, like, better than the last Masters set.
Conspiracy 1 is also really good right now, just so everyone knows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Conspiracy 2 could be good later.
Jason, I ignored Battle Bond the first time around. What are the alternate art foils on Will and Rowan Kinrith?
There's a pre-release version, and then there's a pack version. Like, the pack foil has the same art as the pre-release version, but, like, it's not stamped. So there's, there's two arts for Will and Rowan. There's the pack non-foil, and then there's the foil art. And if you open the foil card from a pack, it will have the same art as the pre-release promo, and it will be foil, but it will not have a date stamp. Does that make sense?
So you can, I just want to know, can you open up the, so if you open a foil Will or Rowan Kenrith?
It will guaranteed be different art, just like Kaya.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Plus you'll get both of them foil.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, all the partners are always together in packs.
The partners are together and they're both the same.
I never opened a pack of Battle Bond. I just bought Battle Bond cards. That's actually pretty cool. And they are the most, those alternate art foils are the most expensive cards in the set by a lot. Doubling Seasons at 40.
Well, Foil Breitling's a lot too. Like, there's some good stuff in the set.
Foil True Name's 200.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually bought one of those the other day for the store. And it's the only one I think I'll ever see. Because there's no way people are opening up the set anymore. Except apparently now maybe they will be.
Well, I think
we get like one or two of those Foil True Names at GP.
I mean, I can get boxes of these for dealer cost. I'm absolutely going to buy a case.
Yeah, I mean, this is crazy because we looked at the last, we've talked about Master Set and just evaluated it on how many cards are worth more than the price of a pack. In this case, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 cards that are $10 or more. And this is a $4 MSRP pack.
It's better than a Master Set. The set's insane.
Yeah, and all the rare cycle of lands are all worth
yes money. Corbin, you're very smart.
I'm aware of that. Spell Seeker is also worth more. I'm pointing out there's a lot of rares that are worth good money, not just mythics.
Yeah, not just the mythics.
Yeah, Diabolic Intent, Greater Good. Yeah, good stuff.
It's a great set, and if they just done the amount of boxes that we're gonna get total all at once, the prices wouldn't have been able to equilibrate as high as they did. And then the new supply will do some stuff, but not really, because it's not going to get bought as much. So really, the first wave established the price, and then the second wave satiated some of the demand, but not enough to move the prices down.
Well, here's
so really, it's sort of like we pegged the prices high, and now you just have lots of copies to sell at the high price.
Okay, so has the second wave actually come out?
No.
Okay. No. So the real question is, let's say Doubling Season. What's it going to do Doubling Season? It's $40 right now.
Probably nothing.
Basically nothing.
I agree. Okay. Well, then this is
just
great.
So the first wave established the price of Doubling Season, and the second wave's like, look at all the $40 Doubling Seasons you got in a $4 booster pack.
Yeah, and also, I mean, it means that the prices are less likely to go up in the next year or whatever by a bit. It'll suppress a little bit of that. But yeah, I agree. I don't think it's dropping them.
This is a nice little handy J for your LGS, so good looking out.
Yeah, there you go. It'll be fun. I mean, it's kind of odd timing with guilds coming out.
Hey, man, I don't know what happened. I don't know what the deal. Nobody knows details. No one knows why they did this.
Yeah. Speaking of, have we talked about Amazon on here yet? Did we talk about that last week?
You said you didn't want to touch it.
Okay, well, I mean, we didn't talk about it last week. We can briefly touch on it this week. What is
it's your not as bad thought? As you think. There, we touched on it briefly.
Yep. I mean, I would go so far as to say it just doesn't even matter. I mean, people could already buy, if people wanted to just buy boxes online for cheaper than the LGS, they could just go buy from Sports and More, whatever the stupid place is on eBay that's selling them for $85 a pop.
They've been able to do that for the last 8 to 10 years.
Yeah, it's just
not new at all.
It's just crazy that people are so up in arms about it. And I just come from the perspective of somebody running a store.
Because people watch their YouTube videos.
Yeah, man. I think it's so hard to tell. Like, the content creation world is so hard, especially with YouTube. It's so hard to know because you never know if somebody is just wrong or if they know they're wrong and they're just stirring up drama for clicks. And you can repeat that about any community, about any subject. But I don't know, like, if people really think it matters to game stores, they really are upset and they're on the side of their local game store. For one, I would ask them where were they at during the Buy a Box promo debacle?
They were on the side of, oh, it's bullshit that your LGS is, what if they don't sell the card to people and just sit on them, blah, blah, blah.
Well, it's just, the thing is, if those people truly
your LGS
believe,
was getting a $30 card that makes your $100 box $70.
Yeah, if people truly believe that this Amazon deal is killing local game stores, then I want to talk to them. But I don't know how many people believe that. I don't know how many people, like, I've seen people go so far as to say, well, Wizards slipped this in underneath the World Championship to hide it or whatever. It's like,
oh, Jesus.
The boxes are $95 on Amazon right now. It's not even that big of a deal. Anybody wanted to buy online could already buy online for cheaper. Most people buy at the LGS because they either get some amount of rewards at their LGS for buying boxes, like a Buy a Box promo, or in our system, we have like a system that rewards people for purchases and essentially gives them cash back and store credit for every purchase, etc. Like, there's lots of reasons to get people into a game store. If somebody was interested in saving $10 a box or whatever when they buy one box every set release, like, they're probably not a very good person for your LGS anyways. They're not buying cards from you.
Devil's advocate here. One of the arguments that people are making is that this is sort of like the second of a 1-2 punch where Wizards stopped being stopped their program to sell direct to local game stores. And
yeah, I agree. So that one's not great.
It's sort of like the secondary effect of that. Like, hey, we're not going to sell our boxes to you anymore for $80, but we will sell them on Amazon for $90. And we'll let distributors just gouge you if they feel like it.
Right. Well, here's the thing. If anybody, I'll say this to anybody listening, wherever you fall on this. If you think if you care and you believe, like, if you genuinely care about your LGS and that's why you're mad about this Amazon thing, let me tell you where to direct that rage. You need to direct that rage at the fact that $100 is a psychological price barrier that no one will break because the cost of boxes to LGSs has gone up $20 in the past 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane. It used to cost $64 a box or something, and now it costs us like $82 a box. The problem isn't $95 Amazon boxes. The problem is the fact that every single box we sell at $100, just like we sold them for at $100 5 years ago, we make half the profit on that we used to, right? And that's because Wizards hasn't raised the MSRP of the boxes or the packs because they want them to be $4 at Walmart or whatever, right? That's the real problem. If MSRP on a box was $180 instead of $150 or whatever, and we all agreed to charge $120, and then Amazon charged $100 or whatever, like, that's the problem. The problem is that the costs have continually been going up to LGSs over the past, probably forever, but at least the last 5 years it's been really major. That's a hell of a lot more concerning than $95 Amazon boxes, which after shipping are $100.
What's the percentage of new box sales for an LGS? Like 5%, 2%, 1%? What is it? I don't know.
It's hard to say, and it's not like I've ever delved into the numbers. I mean, you sell a bunch of boxes. They're not loss leaders. You make money on them, right?
But barely.
Barely. For instance, yeah, I mean, we had sometimes you even discount if people buy a case and you end up selling them for like $90 a box anyways, and you just barely make any money. Like, I could sell 100 boxes and make $15 a box or whatever after taxes and stuff. So, like, that's not that much money. That doesn't even pay your rent, you know? Like, you could sell 100 boxes in a month and not pay rent with it. It's just not... Obviously, it's every little bit counts, but you don't make money on events except for, like, PPTQ-level events where you're taking in over $1,000 at the start or whatever. You don't make money on your F&M, and you don't make money on boxes. It gets people into your store, and then they buy everything else. You make a lot of money on singles. You make a lot of money on other things. You make a lot of money on sleeves and deck boxes and binders and all that sort of crap. And that's where you make your money as an LGS. You don't make your money from boxes or events. Now, obviously, every little bit counts, but I just don't think... I think that the number of people who previously bought at LGSs who are now going to buy on Amazon is minuscule.
Yeah, this thing is perfect for people who just want to complain, and they see an easy comparison. Oh, the prices are going up. They're gouging them, or they're not letting them have it. It's easy to kind of grab your pitchfork on that without putting any thought into, like, if the box sales are 2% of a store's overall sales, and I'm guessing, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's nothing, so shut up.
Yeah.
Well, they get to bitch on both sides of supporting the LGS.
Yeah, it's just, ultimately, it's not about the LGS, it's about the players. And I'm obviously there are different groups of people who are upset about different things. It would be wrong to characterize the people who complain about buy a box promos as the same people defending LGSs now. But, I mean, you can't, the Magic community just in general is just always going to complain about whatever they want to complain about. And I really did not like that during the buy a box stuff that went around, no one seemed to care that they were good for LGSs. No one gave a single shit that it helped you get people into your store. They just cared that they had to pay $5 more for a Nexus of Fate than they wanted or whatever, you know? So it's just feels
honestly, and we shit on those people, and then that's why nobody
garbage
gives
it.
Nobody cares about our podcast. If we just filleted those people and told them how smart they were, we could have way more views. What are we doing? If we said stuff that was dumb and wrong, and then dumb and wrong people hurt us, they're like, "I thought that too. I'm smart." Like, we would be so popular. What are we doing correcting people when they're idiots? Like, why are we bothering?
Talk up Help Collector. Just talk it up.
Yeah, well, we just made the mistake of having some integrity.
And, like, hardcore finance people don't like this podcast. They think they're smarter than us. So, like, who is this podcast for? Why are you listening?
Well, I like to think, and maybe this is a wrong ideal, I like to think that our listeners, they see something like the Amazon thing, and they want our perspective because we have the LGS perspective. And if we said, hey, this is terrible for an LGS, then they're like, I trust them because they don't make everything the end of the world. They don't blow everything out of proportion, but they also call it like it is sometimes. So I would like to think that our opinion carries more weight because of that to the people it matters to, but
I can't.
It's just factually not going to matter to as many people.
I came for you to tell me how to get my Russian foils from Europe here. That's I came to this podcast for that.
I also learned, tell me if this is wrong, guys, I had heard a rumor, I'm not sure about this, that you can no longer get foreign boxes in the United States.
I cannot confirm or deny that. I would have to look into that.
Yeah, I haven't. Okay. We have a guy at our shop that he loves foreign boxes, and we haven't heard anything. I think he was talking about buying some foreign stuff
last weekend. That's, like I said, that is a rumor I heard just on the internet. I'm not saying it's real or not, so I just didn't know if you guys had any insight to it. All right, well, there you go. I'm done ranting for the week. We got any emails, DJ?
We have a actual poop ton of emails.
A poop ton,
because
huh? Poop
ton. We have not done consistent emails since, like, mid-August, because we've just had, like, guests and set reviews and...
We haven't wanted to. Your emails suck. You're idiots.
You know, speaking of poop, Squatty Potty never emailed me back.
Did you get
just a one-shot deal? They didn't even tell us how we did.
We're getting ghosted by shitmongers.
I sent them two. I sent them two follow-up emails, just asking, like, "Hey, just checking in. Really liked working with you. How'd it go? Blah blah blah." I don't even know if we sold any Squatty Potties.
They don't care. They're just like, whatever. These people email us. Just cut them a check.
We've been brown listed.
Get them off our
case. Brown listed.
Oh, I get it. Because poop is brown. I get it. That's
sometimes.
Funny. What do you mean sometimes?
What the hell?
I got a 2-year-old man. Yeah, I was gonna say, sometimes that shit comes out in weird colors.
Man, I wish my daughter would shit.
See, I'm not the worst here. I'm like, my kid poops green shit sometimes. Jay's just like, my daughter doesn't poop at all.
Yeah, she shits every 5 days, and it's the size and shape of a pear.
Wait, your
like,
kid
it's just
poops?
Huge and flared and just dense. She's like Nibbler from Futurama. She just takes a... an 8-pound
I got that
Nibbler from Futurama shit out dark matter.
Yeah, dark matter, oh, antimatter, whatever. Yeah.
So like, man,
Jason's daughter shits dark matter.
Just the size and shape. I'm like, how did that come out of you? It's insane.
It's especially
I don't understand how she does it.
It's especially impressive because girls don't poop.
Yeah.
Or fart.
All right, read an email, DJ, for the love of God.
Okay, this person is just named MN. Hey, Brew Crew and DJ, glad to see that you guys survived the one-ship challenge. This email was, like, August 18th, just to date us a little
bit. Wow, so I'm going to have to listen to a bunch of people shit-talk me because these are old emails.
Even with Corbin's amazingly milky, disrespectful spit to the face of the rules, it was downright one of the best cats to date. Here's a question for you guys.
You spit in the face of the rules, Mr. Hoss.
That's the title of the podcast.
Doesn't make sense.
What's the worst spec you'd like to admit, and at what point do you sell out of those bad positions? We've talked about this question a lot.
You never sell it? What?
Never.
When they go up eventually, because they will.
No such thing as a bad spec. They're all just long-term.
I have splinter frights somewhere in my office. It's going to happen.
I have some very, very long-term lightning angels.
Real talk, though, I did buy a bunch of crucible fires.
Yeah, that would hurt.
That did not pan
sometimes
out.
Reprints pull your pants down, and then you're like, well, then, we just gotta wait.
And then once your pants are pulled down, they reprint it twice more.
Crucible of Fire and Dragon Tempest really hurt.
Yeah, Dragon Tempest at Uncommon, Jesus.
I have two. One of them was that 3/3 creature from Theros that would bestow, and he would do a point of damage. And I thought I was...
Master...
No, not him.
Herald of Torment or something?
That one. The Herald of
Torment.
That
card was sweet.
I was.
I think Bouchard was high on that
and
card.
And I bought 55 copies of it. High, I've been stockpiling for weeks. Because I had looked at all the block stuff off of like MTG Top 8, and I was like, this card is everywhere. This is clearly it. And then that card did nothing. I had a chance to sell them all for $1.50. I was like, no, I'm going to hold on. They're going to do it. And then they immediately tanked to like 35 cents.
You got
to
sell half of them, man. That's what we always say,
right?
I know.
Yeah. And the other set I have is Polish Crusher.
I got
60 Polish Crushers, yep.
Polish Crusher?
Yeah.
I don't even know what that card does.
It has protection from enchantments.
When it monstrosities, I think it destroys an enchantment artifact. Yeah, see, okay.
It's got trample, too.
Yeah. It was, yeah. I quickly
I must crush the Polish.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Sent from the Brainstorm Discord where the prices don't matter and Corbin will never live that challenge down.
Crush the police coming straight out the underground.
I had a coverage member recently talk to me who had a bunch of shock lands from the original Return to Ravnica. And they were like, what do? I have all of them and I don't know if they're going to get reprinted. What do you think I should do? And I told them to sell half of them. And they didn't do it. And 2 weeks later, we're at an event and they previewed shock lands and they were like, yeah, I guess you kind of knew what you were talking about, huh?
Why would they come to you for advice and then not take it? What an asshole.
Inertia, right?
That's
just
about
inertia.
80% of my conversations.
We call those people assholes.
Oh, that's a good one. Asshole.
Asshole, because they ask a question, but they don't give a fuck about your opinion, so they're just like,
should I do this?
I think it was like that. I think it was just inertia to not sell the cards, but...
Stop being
But
nice.
Either way, that is the lesson here. If you have a risky spec and you have an opportunity to get somewhere with it, sell half of them.
All right, next question. $20 patron email from Travers Anon. Hello, successful one-chip challengers and Corbin in parentheses.
God, this is insane.
I'm considering getting more into buying and buylisting collections, and I was wondering...
Eat it and chase it with milk.
I was wondering whether a QS account would be worthwhile for trade routes. Do I just stick with Card Kingdom? If not, what other sites' resources should I be using when buylisting? Also, I can't wait to hear Corbin fully experience a stupidly hot ship. I hope you got to hear that episode. thanks for all the great content and hashtag MTG Finance tips over the years. Travers, sent from my one core Macintosh Apple. P.S. P.S. If you have time, DJ, I'm curious how you got into MTG Finance full time. Would you mind talking about it or pointing me to an article if you've written about it before?
Let DJ talk about himself first. Go ahead.
I've written about it before somewhere. Google it, I guess.
Yeah, get a QS account to find it.
Full disclosure.
Also, no. Go ahead. You're in the Patreon. You're a $20 patron. Just send me a direct message on Discord or something like that.
Yeah.
That's the simple answer that doesn't take up time.
Full disclosure with QS. All of us got our start with QS. I literally got a job writing for DoublingSeason.com before Medina went to Star City 9 years ago or 10 years ago or whatever. It's how I got started in Magic. So I believe we've all worked there. I think we all got – DJ, I guess, got started on BrainstormBrewery.com. But before – just the full disclosure before we talk about this, I don't think a QS subscription is worth it anymore.
I think it can be depending on your volume.
I think they're focusing too much on stuff that isn't Trade Routes, and Trade Routes is – I have a lifetime Trade Routes subscription. I think
QS subscription is worth it for like 4 to 10% of people. Maybe that's probably a very high number too. Like, it's worth it for a very few select people, and I don't think you're probably one of them if you're just considering getting more into biolisting and collections. Like, the free routes, the free options are out there for you, and they're going to be enough. Like, I think the main use of Trade Routes and QS subscription at this point is like the networking and collection buying for like five digit things, and like just like it's more of a high end group than anything at this point, I think.
Yeah, the thing with QS back in the day, QS was where you went for finance content. The forums were incredibly active. There was a lot of good information there.
The Discord
a lot of smart
is
people.
Still active, but
that's what I'm saying. Is it just it's nothing against QS. I just think that more tools became a thing. You don't need to go to the QS forums for finance advice. You can go to the Brainstorm Brewery Discord for $1 a month. You can go to the QS Discord and get information. You can
the QS Discord is tied into the sub.
Sure, but I'm saying, like, price-wise, you know, because that's the question, is if you want to use it for trader tools and advice. I think that the value of all of the Magic Finance sites is basically tied to getting early access to, like, Jason's thoughts on EDH spikes coming or whatever, right? And I just think that there's less value in those things now than there was 5 years ago because there's just more places to get that information.
I agree. But I don't want to I don't want to write it off as like, oh, this is worthless now, because the value
is there.
Right,
I'm not trying
to
say that. Yeah.
If you plan on using it an extensive amount, like with the Ion Scanner, if you're like moving 4 or 5 digits worth of cards over time, like, it is worth it, and it does provide you with a lot of networking tools and contacts and technology. Like, it is there for a specific group of people, but you're just starting it out, so I don't think it's worth it for you.
Well, and the thing with Trade Routes in specific, it was really cool when it worked, and I used to use it a lot a couple years ago. I think that it has I think that Card Kingdom stepped their game up to a significant enough amount that it's just better. The big sell with...
just so everybody actually knows what we're talking about, Trade Routes is a buy-list aggregator that you search for a card name, and then it will tell you X number of stores, generally like 5 to 7 stores, and all of their buy list numbers on that card. So you can look up like, oh, Curse of Exhaustion, Card Kingdom gives you dime, Strike Zone gives you 12 cents, such and such gives you 15 cents, Liliana Last Hope, such and such gives you $30, such and such gives you 28, and you can sort of build your buy list cards around that in Trade Routes, and then export them to those different stores, and it saves you some number of time and money.
It was actually really cool when the export function worked, right? You can make a pile for 3 or 4 different stores, and you can customize what stores you wanted. But I encountered a lot of problems with the exporting when I used it, and this was several years ago. Maybe it changed.
It's gotten worse because they're not focusing on Trade Routes anymore.
Yeah, it just got to the point for me where Card Kingdom was getting 75% of the cards anyways, and then if I and the export wouldn't work, and I was just duplicating work that I'd spend a whole night putting stuff into Trade Routes, and it just then the export wouldn't work, and it would lose it or whatever, and I'd have to redo it all anyways. And I got to the point where it's like, I just sell to Card Kingdom, and I sell to the Blueprint for the bulk cheap stuff, right? It's just, there's a real value to your time, and at some point, getting 2 cents more per card isn't worth having to re-enter it on another website. So
true. Okay,
that's my experience. So there you go.
Hi, a Patreon here from Kyle Kunsinin, something like that. He's from Europe, so. Could you guys discuss MCM/MKM, Magic Card Market, and the differences and the differences with TCG Player? Also, I don't have a clue what TCG Direct means, so it would be nice if you could tell me what it is. I really like it when Corbin is around, so there is some direction on the show, but at the same time, he's a bit of a party pooper. DJ Yora. DJ, you're a host. Accept it like we accepted communism back in the 40s. Sent for my OnePlus 3T.
Did your grandma write that, Corbin?
Oh, man. My grandma's dead, asshole.
Oh.
You got a dead grandma, Corbin.
That's true. Several.
Yeah, both my grandmas are dead, too.
Everyone's got
oh, look at me. I love cigarettes more than I love my grandson. Ooh, that's how I'm a impression of
both of them.
You have,
like, I guess, step-dead grandparents, right?
That's Corbin's adopted, so
they don't count.
Yeah. No, they don't count. Dude, I'm adopted because my biological mom is like 15, which means my like biological grandmother is probably like 40.
Just tell us you're in Oklahoma. You don't need to give us the whole stuff about
Or it means she was like
15. 30
because it's a generational thing.
Yeah. Which means she's probably like 50 now.
Also, I don't have a clue what TCG Direct means. TCG Player Direct is a program where if you order from TCG Player through direct authorized sellers and direct authorized products, then all of those different cards you're ordering from different sellers will come to you as one package. So Channel Fireball sells on TCG Player, Star City sells on TCG Player, all these other stores sell on TCG Player. You can sort of pick cards from different sellers, and if those cards are in stock at the TCG Direct inventory, you will get them all in one package. So it's sort of like an aggregator for selling, if you will. Like, you just buy cards from a bunch of different stores, you get them all in one package.
I gotta say, I love TCG Player Direct from both sides. We recently opted into it at the store, and it's so much easier for us, because now when we come in on a Monday and we have 40 orders, we just ship them to one address. We don't have to send out 40 different packages, which means you don't, as the seller, you don't have to deal with 40 different customers complaining that their cards got lost or not in the right condition, blah, blah, blah.
Significantly higher, though.
That's fine. I mean, it's nice. It's a lot of convenience. But as a buyer, you also get to charge a little more with TCG Player Direct.
Yeah.
But because people just want the experience. And as a buyer, you always know what you're going to get. The cards are going to be graded consistently. You're not having to fight with individual sellers. You get all your cards in one package. I recommend it from every angle.
You didn't even give the best thing. It comes quickly. Like,
Exactly.
I can buy Commander stuff for Saturday night. I can buy it on like Monday or Tuesday, and I'm almost 100% positive I will have it ready to go. I don't even think about it. That to me is the biggest thing, is the speed.
Yeah, it's crazy, actually. It's really smart by TCG Player too, in the sense that they didn't want to be their own store. They're a marketplace. But by doing direct, they get to do all the things that people go to stores, big stores for. You know, you get the same experience, right? You know what you're going to get. You know what to expect. You know what to deal with. And they kind of get to play the best of both worlds with the TCG Player Direct system.
And I think it's just smart all around. The differences between Magic Card Market. Magic Card Market has significantly lower fees. It is the sort of marketplace TCG Player-esque thing for Europe. It has significantly less fees for sellers. If you're selling a Magic Card Market in Europe, you're only looking at like a 5% fee, which is absurdly low when you look at TCG Player and eBay's like 12%. Yeah. And MCM, in terms of as a buyer, I'm not really sure that many differences, like, because I can't buy from MKM directly, as I have a US address and you need a European address to buy from Magic Card Market. But generally, like, I guess the biggest difference would be that you can order from multiple different countries on MKM, so you can check their order or check the card and be like, oh, I'm going to order this card from Spain. It might take this amount of time to get here because I live in Germany. I live in the UK. I want to order from Belgium or Italy or whatever. Like, we could probably have a guest on in the future who's European to talk more about that. Yeah.
So what did the expenses for people, I don't know who this applies to, I don't know how far TCG Player Direct extends, but from the seller side, DJ, what are the differences? What are the fees difference and so on? Like, do you think it's worth it?
it is worth it depending on your volume and your number of like orders that you're processing. Like it's yes and no thing. Like it's sure. just a 20-minute conversation that I could do a brain bite on about like your volume and like how many, what the average value of cards you're listing are, because like if you have like a $2 order and you get, it goes direct, like you get destroyed. Whereas like if you have a $30 order and you go direct, it's not a big deal, but like big sticky note topic to do later.
Sure, absolutely. All right, next email.
Michael Barslow, new-ish $10 Patreon, set on August 30th. I was looking into Shadows over Innistrad and Eldritch Moon. I was wondering if there are any low-hanging fruit in those sets that you think will be difficult to reprint due to mechanics. I was looking at the Investigate cards, but I'm not so sure. Thoughts? Sent for my Samsung cell at work, not earning my pay. I think a lot of the quality Investigate cards could just be easily slotted into a Masters set, like Tireless Tracker.
Yeah.
Like Mausoleum Wonders, maybe a good pickup, or like Rattle Chains, because they're like, they jumped, but they're still like $1 or $2 a piece. They're very cheap. The Liliana of the Last Hope is like ridiculously expensive now. I think Jason fell asleep.
Jason, you alive? Oh shit, he's really gone.
Nah, I had to take a leak. Your question was boring, so I left. Did I get asked a question specifically?
Well, is there anything in Shadows over Innistrad or Eldritch Moon that you think are low-hanging fruit that are difficult to reprint?
I mean, maybe some of the vehicles.
Shadows over Innistrad and Eldritch
Moon? Yeah, the vehicles from Shadow over Innistrad.
The coaches and the horses and such.
No, I don't know, man. No, I don't have any specific stuff from that block I'm targeting.
Yeah, Investigate is a mechanic that they have stated they could visit again just because they like the fluidity of the gameplay. I don't really think they would jam cards.
They probably don't reprint any of that stuff.
Yeah,
though. If they do redo the mechanic, they'll just do all new stuff.
Yeah, and Tireless Tracker and such could just be in a master set, so I don't really think there's anything super obvious. Like I said, the spirit cards, I think, would be the only thing.
Just the vehicles. I just like the concept of like those two blocks being together.
Yeah. The smuggler's copter bit.
Yeah. Smuggler's yeah. copter bit.
Okay, so we have another email. This one is from Patrick Sullivan. I'm not sure if it's the Patrick Sullivan. I highly doubt it, but if it is,
I'm sure it's the Patrick Sullivan.
It'd be cool if that Patrick Sullivan was listening to this podcast.
Very, very unlikely.
You know what, Corbin? You are a party pooper.
That's true. You're right. That's my job, man. I like have a PR degree. You're supposed to see all the things that go wrong and stop them from happening. You're supposed to be pessimistic about everything.
This email,
I wouldn't tell people that's your training when you're
never
in Wizards
brag
coverage.
About having a PR degree.
That's fine. It's fine.
This email was sent in response to our response to an email that was sent about the Commander's Arsenal. Somebody asked why that product hadn't been redone, and we were sort of at a loss because we thought it was a good product. And so this person said they wanted to chime in on why they still don't make the Commander's Arsenal. It is simple, and you can go back and find this info very easily. It was never meant to be anything but a fill-in product. In 2011, Wizards released the first Commander product, and it was going to be in their flex release slot every third year, alternating with Arch Enemy and Plane Chase. But the response blew all the expectations out of the water, and they almost immediately decided to make it an every year item. However, as they worked so far ahead, they didn't have a product ready for the next year, so they created the Commander's Arsenal as a 1 year stopgap, and then starting in 2013, we have seen Commander products every year. That's why it was not made anymore. It was a one of, although that certainly doesn't mean they couldn't bring it back. Great cast, thanks.
Yeah, that doesn't answer the question of why they don't do it now that they know it would be popular and sell out. Like, it's not even supposed... Like, I realize it was a stopgap, but it wasn't supposed to be the same thing. So, like, there's no reason not to do it.
Yeah.
At all. Because it wouldn't satisfy the same markets as a new Commander product, so...
I don't know.
Maybe do it next to Christmas. Maybe do something near Christmas, like...
I mean...
I used to just ask my relatives who don't know anything about me... Because I don't want to get to know them. They don't know anything about me. And they're like, what do I get you for Christmas? I just give me the Commander decks. And then now they can't do that because they come out in like July. So I don't know. Have something around Christmas that isn't the shitty gift set that nobody wants who's been playing Magic more than a month. Right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I do think it's worth considering that, like, maybe they just weren't that popular.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
even if they weren't then, they are now. They would be.
No, you were getting them for, like, quadruple MSRP on eBay within weeks.
Yeah, but that may be because they made so few of them. Maybe they... I mean, I have no idea, I guess. I mean, we're obviously...
Well, if they made an amount, and then that amount sold out immediately, and then they were five times as much on eBay, I don't understand how you could say that that wasn't popular.
I agree with you.
If they did a second run of Battle Bond...
I'm just saying
that... They could do that and have a second run of that if it...
Yeah, I agree. I'm just saying maybe...
There's stuff that needs
it. I'm just saying maybe they have data that we don't... I mean, I can't see a reason for it either, but...
Maybe sometimes they make... dumb fucking decisions.
Maybe not have two master sets in 1 year.
Yeah, it's also possible that they realize that there are people who are going to spend a lot of money on something like that. What if you can get them to spend that money on a master's product that can appeal to everybody instead of a product that specifically only appeals to commander players? I don't know. I'm just, like I said, I'm literally just trying to find a reason why they wouldn't do it again. But I don't know. Maybe they just decided they have research that says players who are going to drop this much money on a product, we're better served by getting them to drop it on this product rather than that.
On 7 planeswalkers and 16 booster packs.
Right. Like, it's very possible. I don't know, but I mean, that's the only thing I can think of. So, All right,
so we've got a couple more emails here, but I think we can save them for next week at the very
least.
Yeah,
I might even bust out.
We're not
going
to do an emails next week.
No, I'm busting out. Oh, I won't be. Yeah, I'll be here next week. I'm going to bust out a From the Vault emails for next week.
Oh, nice. All right. We do Pick of the Week, nerds.
Pick of the Week. Pick of the Week. Pick of the Week. Time for the Pick of the Week.
Pick of the week. I got a good one this week. All right, guess.
No, you don't.
I do. I feel happy. I bet you. It might have been.
All right, well, go first.
You want me to go first?
Go first. Right. Yeah, go first.
Well, I'm sure somebody's going to jump in and say they picked it before because I don't know. But Necrotic Ooze is taking off.
Oh, finally.
Oh. I don't know that I. That's what I think I'm saying. I wrote about that in an article because it's obvious with Lazav decks.
It's one of these that's been taking off. Like, we've talked about it for actual years at this point. But the data. Because I found one, I was...
Now, people are running the Necrotic Ooze, Phyrexian...
Dreadnought.
Delver? Phyrexian Delver?
Dreadnought.
The 7 Devour. Mana thing from Alliances.
Phyrexian...
Devour, yeah.
In what? Yeah. Commander?
Lazav.
Oh, in Commander, sure, yeah. Like I said, this card has been creeping up for years. We've talked about it for a long time. I don't know if anyone's ever actually made it their Pick of the Week before, but I am making it my
Pick of the
Week.
I made it my Pick
right
of the Week like 6 years ago, so it's not on the spreadsheet.
Sure, man.
I wrote about this in an article like last week or the week before, but like, I don't think anyone said anything on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean,
recently.
Like, the worst thing that we could do is miss a card like this to tell people about because I don't want to step on other people's toes. Like, we've all talked about the card. I'm not claiming to have any special insight. I just went to sell one last night and looked at the spread, looked at the chart on it, and it is actually taking off. So, Necrotic Ooze has not gone yet as of this recording. This isn't it's spiked now, I'm telling you about it. It is literally, 20 cents more than it was a week ago, but it is on the way.
It's gonna.
I sold all my because
it's
foils.
A second spike. It's spiked before in the past. Lazav is doing this, and it's gonna go.
Yeah, it's gonna be $5.
Well, the foils spiked. The non-foils never really got anywhere.
Because
there are fewer foils.
Had a jump, but they didn't. Like, they went from, 50 cents near bulk or whatever to $1.50. But since then, it's just, as I don't know if you call that a spike or not, but since then, it's climbed, and it is spike. This is the early part of this card spiking, and I'm confident that a month from now, it's going to have spiked to $4 or $5 somewhere along the line. So,
yeah, easy game.
I have loved this card for years.
Yep.
Yeah, but like the thing about this is it's even better with Lazav because you use Lazav to make it a copy of the ooze and then you can pay 0 mana to give your new Lazav ooze the abilities of all the creatures in the graveyard so you don't have to pay to make Lazav a copy. It's like the Quicksilver Elemental in Mirsil.
I'm
the
not
same
totally
card.
Sure I followed that, but that sounds powerful.
Yeah, it's just like Quicksilver. Like, in Mirsil decks, you could only use each ability once. But then if you made Mirsil have Quicksilver Elemental's ability, you could use the abilities as many times as you want. That's how you went off with that deck.
Okay.
The same thing with the Lazav deck. You can give it an ability for zero mana versus having to make it a copy of everything. So that's how you go off with the Lazav deck.
How do you give it an ability for zero mana?
Because Necrotic Ooze has all the abilities.
Necrotic Ooze has
the ability. Oh, I understand. You're saying you don't have to pay.
You don't use Lazav anymore. You make Lazav the ooze, and then you do the ooze stuff.
You were just
rather than doing.
It's
Lazav.
Not a zero mana activation. It just has it. I gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, sweet. All right, who's next?
I got one. I think there's some modern overlap, but this is absolutely an EDH card. I keep forgetting this wasn't in an EDH deck. This was actually in a set. The card, of course, is Kembal, Consul of Allocation.
That card's great.
This card's like a buck non-foil, $5 foil. I like both. This is in modern sideboards. It's like vintage playable. It's playable in EDH. This does stuff in every format.
Yeah.
When an opponent casts a non-creature, they lose 2 life and you gain 2 life. Boom. Brutal.
You're right.
Stop your storm. Stuff your thousand-year storm crap.
I mean,
get out of here with that.
This is going to be a great test of whether or not these sort of medium-ish cards can spike when they're from a set as recent as Kaladesh, but I think this is a good one to test that theory.
It's a non-mythic rare in the post-mythic era, but I think that
it's got enough formats
that want it that I kind of think people are like, it's a rare, but I think enough formats want it. If people start vacuuming up copies of this, it'll go.
Yeah, it feels like every couple years we kind of have to check ourselves on, we've been doing this for so long, on what can and can't happen, because we're like, oh, it's a rare in the post-mythic era. And then we'll look up and like, oh, it's 5 years old and it spiked. Omnath was the one that really kind of drove that home for me recently. Like, Battle for Zendikar is not that old, right? But hey,
no.
New card came out for it and the card hit $10. Like, that's just, I sold one for $6 at Card Kingdom. Like, that's insane to me. That set was legal, standard legal, like yesterday to me. There were a million of them, you know?
So yeah, but like it, people thought it should have gotten a reprint and it didn't. And then they're like, all right. Yeah.
Well, that was the one for me that really drove home. Like, yeah, you just got to stay on top of it. Sometimes you just write off cards as, oh, it can't spike because X. But with the right circumstances come along, namely Commander, it can. So Kembal is a good one, too.
Yep. It's in like 700 decks as a Commander. It's in as an inclusion in 5,500. Like, it's a card. Yeah, gain life. Life gain triggers are good. Gets played in other formats. Go for it.
Mine's boring. All
right, who's up?
Mine's boring.
Okay, what
hit
is it?
Hit us with your boring pick.
Then go first. It'll make mine look better.
Omniscience.
Omniscience? Is that what you said?
Yep.
But it is boring.
Yeah, that's boring, but like, so is most of the money you make doing MTG Finance.
I mean, most of the money you make, any of us make, is going to be boring, right? That's the... It's a lot... It's more meat and potatoes than specking on whatever stupid Guilds of Ravnica card just jumped, Pelt Collector, but doesn't mean it's bad.
If you're listening to this podcast and you're like, why? Then shut up. You should know why.
It just got reprinted. It's at the bottom, same as Crucible Worlds. All right, Steven, what do you got, man?
All right, I got EDH pick as usual. I'm going to go with Disallow out of 8.
What do you mean as usual? This is your second time on the podcast.
That's usual. So it's 100%.
That is usual. 100%
precedent.
That's math.
Disallow.
Nerd. Okay, Disallow. Aether Revolt. It's in 12,000 decks. I know Jason's not a big fan of just throwing out the raw number, so I did some comparisons. Disallow is Counterspell mixed with Stifle. Stifle's in 3,500 decks. Counterspell's in 57,000. This is going to go up. I want options with Counterspells. It's a 3-mana counter. It's, I mean, when tons of people are playing Cancel, 7,500 decks have it, this is a much better spell. This card will be $5, $6, $7 in a few years. It'll be a little harder to reprint. We saw Swan Song get reprinted, and the Commander version is 50 cents more than the Theros version. They're like,
yeah, Swan Song just shrugged that reprint off.
Like it was nothing. This is one of those counter spells where it literally will do almost anything for you. Counter spells, counter activate abilities, counter trigger abilities. It's one of those 3-mana counters like Dissipate, Fairy Trigger, Hinder that I rely on as a person who loves to play blue. You can get these right now for $2 to $3 non-foil. The foils, I love those too. They're $7.50 to $10. It's a counter spell, so it's not going to stay on the field, so the foils might not be as exciting. But that is a great card. It's the number one card right now that's in EDH decks off of out of Aether Revolt.
Well, it's a rock stats star right there. Well, that was great work. I'm going to give you one question, though.
Go.
How low do you think it's going to go? Because it's in free fall right now from standard rotation.
Oh,
How low do you think it goes?
Like right now, you can get it for $2 to $3. I was looking before the cast. If this can get under too close to one, I'm going to just buy a bunch. I've been sitting on some foils when they were pretty reasonable, and I'm going to grab a bunch of non-foils too. I love this card. This card is going to be a $4 or $5 card.
I mean, Void Slime is $8, and this is better than that because it's a lot more castable.
Yeah, I love this card.
Void Slime's a little older.
Well, I mean, it's quite a bit older, but it's also infinitely harder to play.
Yeah.
All right, well, there you go. Steven, thanks again for coming on, man. Anything else you guys want to touch on this week before we get out of here?
No, just thanks for having me on the cast. If you're not a Patreon or a patron for these guys, it is worth your money. The value is amazing. You get Jason shit-talking you. It is worth every penny.
I mean, for a dollar. Like, we're not saying, hey, you need to be in at 40 or whatever. I think we can make the case easily that you give us a buck and have access.
Well,
to the
we
Discord
just had is... the we just had the post month wipe, right? You know, you always lose a handful of patrons at the end of the month because their credit card expired or whatever. So it's a little lower right now, but we'd sure like to have that BSB party next year. That's what we're building towards with the next goal on the patrons. So I would like to be able to do that.
So how far are we from that?
Well, I think we're at like 15-20 or something right now. So we're $230 away. I mean, it's not like we have to have it next month or whatever. I think as long as we get there, you know, by, you know, January, February of next year, we can start planning for an event at that point and still give everyone plenty of time. So hopefully we make it.
I would like to get to $2,000 because I would like to bring our wives on the cast and talk shit about us.
That would be fun.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, there you go, everybody. Brainstorm Brewery. Enjoy your Guilds of Ravnica. Enjoy draft weekend this weekend or standard or whatever it is you're up to. And we can come back next week and check in on just how wrong we were about it. So thanks for listening.